Coming up next on Lutheran Radio UK,
The Lutheran Inquisitor, examining pressing issues and their ramifications for the church today.
Lament in the Gospel of Luke is the topic of today's show with your host, Pastor John Ehlers.
Hello and welcome to the Lutheran Inquisitor. I'm your host, John Ehlers. I'm pastor of Christ Lutheran Church in Orpington, Kent. I also work with the Reina Mission in the Medway Towns and St. Columba Lutheran Church in East Kilbride, a suburb of Glasgow. I'd like to invite you along, but if you don't live in the area, why not go to our website, lutheran.co.uk, click on the directory button, find the congregation nearest to where you live, and go along and attend a service. I'd also like to thank you for your prayerful and your financial support of Lutheran Radio UK. It means everything to us to know that our listeners pray for us and that you are generous toward us in our mission to bring the gospel of Jesus Christ to the world. We are very pleased to welcome back Dr. Channing Crisler. He is professor of New Testament and Greek from Anderson University and Champ Divinity School, and he is working on a new book looking at lament in the Gospel of Luke. Dr. Channing, welcome back.
Yeah, it's great to be back with you again. Thanks for having me.
It's great to talk to you again. As we look at this subject, can you tell us what you mean by lament?
Sure. I always like to talk about lament for sort of from two or three perspectives. One of them is just if you look in the biblical text, and particularly a good place to go and look for lament is in the Psalms, because over a third of the Psalms are sort of technically labeled by scholars as Psalms of lament. And so it's first and foremost a form of prayer that ancient Israelites uttered, and it's oftentimes marked by really sort of jarring cries, like, "How long will you hide your face from me, O Lord?" or "Why have you forsaken me?" But that's really just the tip of the iceberg in terms of what lament is. That's what we associate it with it the most, but there's just a whole lot more to it. There's a particular set of participants. There's the lamenter and his enemies and God. There's a particular kind of idiom where it might be questions like "How long?" but it can also be just really heartfelt petitions to God, begging for mercy, begging for deliverance, asking God to make good on his promises. And then with all that, there's just really a whole sort of theology that kind of undergirds prayers of lament. And it's oftentimes what I would call sort of a theology of suffering. So from a biblical standpoint, there's just a whole lot of moving parts there in terms of what lament is. It's first and foremost a prayer form, but it really communicates so much more to the Bible reader than just, you know, here's a kind of prayer that you find in Scripture. And then, you know, theologically, I think that this has implications for the way that we do understand suffering from a scriptural standpoint, how we address God. And as I mentioned in our previous time together, there's oftentimes a sort of a pattern or sequence in these prayers of lament. And so what really sort of sparks this cry of distress is that Yahweh or God has made a prior promise, and then the lamenter himself is suffering something that really is in tension with that prior promise. And so that leads to this cry of distress, or sort of what we would see as the primary sort of cry or lament itself. And then somewhere in the course of that experience, the lamenter receives deliverance from God. Now, it may not be actual deliverance from the predicament that he finds himself in. It may be a reminder of God's promise to save. In the Old Testament, sometimes it's a vision or an oracle from God. And then in some circumstances, it is actual deliverance from political enemies or a foreign opponent on the battlefield and so forth. And then all of that sort of then results in praise, is sort of the final piece of the sequence or the pattern. But what I like to remind people is that's never really the final ending point. That again and again, people sort of go through this again and again in the biblical text. So one cry is answered, and then again another promise is challenged by suffering, and so the whole thing continues to go on and on and on. And then the third perspective I would talk about in terms of lament is, are its implications for us today, implications for people in the church, implications for people who are suffering. I think that it does provide for us both the permission to cry out quite ardently to God in a way that we might not normally feel comfortable doing. But it also, I think, provides for us sort of some theological parameters by which we can sort of understand our suffering, experiencing that as believers in the gospel. And so I think it has some implications for Christians today as well.
So with that as our foundation, then, let's build on that platform. Last time we spoke about lament in the book of Romans, and I think that was easy for me to follow. And then we talked about lament in the Gospel of Luke. But I must confess, I was a bit puzzled because Luke doesn't strike me as a gospel full of lament. Can you help elucidate us on that and where lament begins? I think you were talking about, first of all, people lamenting to Jesus.
I sort of intuitively knew after my work on Romans that within the history of early Christianity, Paul cannot be the only sort of person who was tapping into this ancient prayer form. And so I sort of began scouring over the New Testament, and secondary reading that I had done, there were a few scholars who had noticed lament in other books, but really not a whole lot in Luke. But as I was reading through Luke and Acts, I recognized that, first of all, that people were constantly coming and crying out to Jesus. And because of my familiarity with Old Testament lament, what I really began to realize is that their cries really echoed the language of the Psalms of Lament and other kinds of Old Testament lament. And it happened so much as I began to look more and more in the Gospel of Luke that I knew it wasn't just me seeing it there. And I knew that it probably was not just a coincidence that Luke, as the author, was actually really working with this ancient prayer form in the way that he described both people lamenting to Jesus, but also Jesus lamenting himself to God, and then also Jesus even in some ways teaching his disciples how to lament. So I think if you're sort of puzzled and looking for lament in Luke, if we think about laments to Jesus, they're really sort of all over the place. The first one that I really recognize is in Luke chapter 5 and verses 4 through 11. And here, if you'll recall, is Peter and the disciples have been fishing all night and they haven't caught anything. Jesus instructs them to, you know, push out to sea and let their nets down one more time. And Peter is hesitant, you know, but he says, "Because you said it, Lord, I'll do it." And of course, when they do, their nets are almost just bursting and overflowing with fish. And when Peter goes to Jesus right after this, he essentially laments to Jesus. He says, "Get away from me, I'm a sinful man." And Jesus' response is for him not to be fearful, but from now on he'll make them fishers of men. And in that whole episode, what I really came to see is that it has a lot of parallels with places like Isaiah chapter 6. This is a call narrative. So Jesus is calling Peter to be an apostle and to eventually be a witness to the gospel. And just as Isaiah was being called to go out and proclaim a message, when he was called and he was in the very presence of God himself, he recognized his own sinfulness and he cries out, right? "I'm a man of unclean lips. I live among a people of unclean lips." And God has to send an angel to touch his lips with a coal from the altar to sort of cleanse him and reassure him that what God's calling him to do, that he can do. And so I found it very interesting that here is Peter being called, here's Isaiah being called, both of them cry out about their sinfulness, and they both receive a response of comfort and cleansing and forgiveness. Now, admittedly, in the scene in Luke chapter 5, it's very subtle. It's almost ironic. I mean, this is not Peter having a vision of Yahweh in the temple. This is Peter essentially recognizing something about Jesus while he's, you know, in the muck and mire of fishing. And I think that's really intentional, right? That just as we see in all of the Gospels, Jesus' divine identity is oftentimes ironic, subtle, and hidden, But that's really the first place that I see sort of this notion of someone crying out to Jesus, lamenting to Jesus, in the way that people in the Old Testament only direct those kinds of laments to God himself. And I think this is a really important point that I want to make, and that is that the way that people lament to Jesus in the Gospel of Luke is really unprecedented in the Old Testament or in Second Temple Judaism if you're talking about one person talking to another human being. The only time that you really see in ancient Judaism or in the Old Testament, the only time that you really see people crying out to the way they cry out to Jesus and Luke is when they're crying out to God himself. And so I think that this speaks to the way that Luke is trying to say about Jesus, that yes, he is the Messiah. Yes, he is Jesus of Nazareth. Yes, he is a human being, but there's more to him than that. Look at what he's doing. He's able to answer people's laments only in a way that Yahweh could in the Old Testament. And so that is really sort of, I think, one of the first places that you see in Luke, and then you're sort of off and running, because what you begin to see is that people come to Jesus crying out to him, and their cries, they're like prayers of lament from the Old Testament, in the language that's used, in the setting that's involved, and the suffering that they're experiencing. And so that's where it would really would begin, and I can certainly add more to that, but if your question is where do we start, that's what I would suggest.
Could you give us a few more examples then of some of the ones you think perhaps are a bit more obvious for dummies like me? Again, because I'm very intrigued by this.
Yeah, sure. I think that I should mention that all of this really sort of reaches its climax in the crucifixion scene in Luke 23, and I'll talk about that in just a minute. But some other examples would be in Luke chapter 8, where you have this very well-known account of Jesus is asleep on the boat. There's a storm on the sea. The disciples wake him up and say, you know, Master, Master, we are perishing. And then Jesus simply, you know, calmly gets up, rebukes the storm, and there's calm, and they're sort of left wondering, who is this? And so while Luke doesn't quote the Old Testament here, admittedly, you don't see a citation formula that says something like, as it is written. But the circumstances and the language that he uses, I think, really do evoke, again, some key psalms of lament. And I'll mention two of them. So in Psalm 44, which is a classic communal lament, the Israelites, it's not clear exactly what point in history that they sort of find themselves at when this prayer is constructed, but there is an insistence by the psalmist that they're innocent and that they're being defeated in battle, and that it's not because of anything that they've done. And towards the end of that psalm, there is a cry in which, the psalmist asks God to wake up, right? Now the psalmist doesn't ultimately believe that, you know, Israel's God is a God who literally sleeps, but the fact that they're perishing and they can't understand why, it's almost as if God is just asleep. And then also in Psalm 107, I think even more closer to the circumstance than Luke 8 with the storm at sea, is there, I had never really recognized this until I went back and looked, but in Psalm 107, from verses 23 through 30, the psalmist actually speaks about fishermen who went out to sea, who experience a storm. They cry out to God, and God commands the storm to be still. And the setting and the circumstances and the language is just, it's almost as if Luke has just pulled it off from Psalm 107. And again, in a sort of ironic and sort of subtly stated way, the fact that you have these fishermen at sea and Jesus is asleep and they wake him up and he rebukes the storm. I mean, Luke is just bringing together some of those threads from Old Testament lament, and it really is sort of raising the question, who exactly is it that the disciples are dealing with here? That this is no ordinary man from Galilee. He's obviously even more than what we expected as a messianic figure. that he is, in fact, God incarnate, because people can cry out to him in the way that they cried out only to God, and he can answer them in only a way that God can answer. And so, for me, that's one of the more, once you especially recognize that connection with Psalm 107, it really sort of jumps off the page at me in terms of the parallels between what the psalmist describes and what's going on with the disciples in Luke chapter 8. And so there's more examples like that all throughout the Gospel of Luke, where again Luke doesn't just come out and quote the Old Testament word for word, but I think he's working with these prayers of lament to describe Jesus's interaction with people, and ultimately, obviously, to answer the question, who is Jesus? And I think part of that answer is that Jesus is God who has come to answer our cries. And so, you know, I think that we don't have to wait until we get to somewhere like John chapter 1 and John's prologue about the Word became flesh. I don't think we have to delay and wait until we get there to understand the gospel writers as portraying Jesus as God and as a man. That it's already happening perhaps in more subtle ways as in comparison to John, but equally powerful once you sort of hear these echoes of lament that Luke is in fact using. But I think the most powerful example of this again comes in Luke 23 at the crucifixion scene, because here Luke is the only gospel writer who tells us what the criminals who were crucified with Jesus, he's the only one that gives any of the actual dialogue. Matthew and Mark just tell us that both criminals were mocking Jesus, angry at Jesus. But Luke actually tells us that yes, they were both mocking Jesus at first, but somewhere there's a turn in one of the criminals' hearts. And so oftentimes commentators and interpreters will refer to one of the criminals as sort of the penitent criminal, but I actually like to call him the lamenting thief or the lamenting criminal, because what he actually says to Jesus, again, it comes from a prayer of lament, because he says two things in this particular setting. First of all, he admits that he's getting what he deserves. In fact, he wants the other criminal who's mocking Jesus to be quiet, because he tells them, look, we're getting what we deserve. Jesus, however, hasn't done anything to deserve this. And so there's sort of this cry of confessing his sin. But then he turns to Jesus, and as Luke writes it in the Greek text, he cries out to Jesus, Manesthetai mou, remember me. Now that phrase is all over the place in the Psalms of Lament. But again, the only person to whom it's directed in the Psalms of Lament is God himself. So for this criminal to utter this phrase, to make this request, at this moment is quite remarkable, right? And Jesus doesn't turn to him and say, well, you really shouldn't be asking me to remember you in death. You really should be asking God himself. But of course, Jesus doesn't do that. You know, as the criminal cries out, remember me when you come into your kingdom, Jesus' response is, today you'll be with me in paradise. And so I think that this is sort of Luke's climactic way of saying all these people have cried out to Jesus and he's answered them as only God could. And in this moment here, climactically, you know, this man utters something that's usually reserved for God alone, and yet he directs it towards Jesus, and Jesus is able to answer it. And so it says a great deal, again, about the identity as Luke sees Jesus. And again, the Synoptic Gospels, Matthew and Mark and Luke, are oftentimes sort of downplayed in terms of do they portray Jesus as God? And I actually think that they do, particularly here in the case of Luke, but they don't do it in the same way that the Gospel of John does. But that doesn't mean that they're, you know, saying that Jesus is somehow less than God in the flesh. We just have, I think, to sort of tune our ears to hear the way that they do it. And I think one of the ways that Luke does it is, again, to have these characters all throughout his Gospel directing their laments to Jesus, prayers that were usually directed towards God now being redirected towards Jesus. Jesus has an ability to answer them. What then does that say about who Jesus is in the Gospel of Luke?
Okay, I think you've sold me on that one. I'm impressed by that. Thank you. But you also mentioned that Jesus cries out to God with prayers of lament. Can you give us some examples of those?
Sure. So these really take place most often in terms of Jesus sort of lamenting over the city of Jerusalem. So two passages in particular, Luke 13 and then again in Luke 19, as Jesus sort of inches closer to Jerusalem and to his eventual crucifixion. And what's really interesting here is that in Luke 13, for example, he, on the one hand, he is crying out over Jerusalem in the same way that the prophet Jeremiah cried out over Jerusalem and the citizens of Jerusalem and their rebellion. So neither Jeremiah or Jesus is really lamenting the material city itself. It's what the city symbolizes. And what it symbolizes, of course, is, you know, here's the place in which God chose for his name to dwell, right? Chose for the temple to be built. Here's the place in which all the nations were to eventually look for salvation. And so when Jesus laments over Jerusalem, he's lamenting over their rejection of him and over the rejection of the salvation that he brings. And in the language that Luke uses to describe this moment that Jesus cries out over Jerusalem, again, it evokes Old Testament lament. So on the one hand, he evokes different passages from Jeremiah. And as you probably well know, you know, Jeremiah is oftentimes referred to as this sort of weeping prophet. And Jeremiah oftentimes, again, he too explicitly is lamenting over Jerusalem's rebellion against God. Jesus is doing something similar. And so here, again, we have this contrast. Jesus not only answers lament, but he also laments himself like the weeping prophet Jeremiah does. But also in that Luke 13 passage, you know, Jesus also evokes an image that's related to God alone, because he says, you know, how often I wanted to gather you as a hen gathers its brood under its wings. Well, that imagery of sort of God's protective nature, likening him to a bird who puts its brood under its wings, is something that you find in the Old Testament. You find it in Psalms of Lament, but you also find it in the Song of Moses in Deuteronomy 32. And so, again, I think that Luke proves all throughout Luke and Acts that he's quite familiar with the Old Testament. So I don't think that he's drawing that imagery out of thin air. Again, I think to apply that to Jesus is saying something very significant about his identity, that on the one hand, Jesus comes like a lamenting prophet like Jeremiah. On the other hand, he also is God among us, crying out over those who would reject him, those whom he wants to protect, in the same way that you see God doing in the Old Testament. So something similar happens also in Luke 19, where he is weeping over Jerusalem. And then again, this sort of finds its climactic moment again in Luke 23. Because in Luke 23, not only does Jesus answer the lamenting thief, but then Jesus also utters his own prayer of lament. And here we actually do have a citation from one of the Psalms of Lament, from Psalm 31. Because Jesus' last words in the Gospel of Luke at the crucifixion scene is, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit." So that phrase, except for the Father part, the pater, Jesus adds that, or Luke adds that, but the line, "Into your hands I commit my spirit," is actually found word for word in Psalm 31. And Psalm 31 is technically a psalm of lament. And commentators, interpreters will oftentimes try to drive a huge wedge between, say, Jesus' cry of dereliction in Matthew 27 and in Mark 15, you know, my God, why have you forsaken me? That's a line from Psalm 22, which is also a Psalm of Lament. But then they want to draw sort of this really huge contrast between that line and what Jesus says in Luke 23, into your hands I commit my spirit. But actually, if you read the wider context of Psalm 31, what we find is that the psalmist, the lamenter there, is just as distressed in Psalm 31 as he is in Psalm 22. Because in the wider context of Psalm 31, the reason that the lamenter is entrusting himself to God is because he wants to be vindicated from his enemies. So the wider context of Psalm 31 speaks about enemies surrounding him, speaks about what he has suffered, what he's afflicted by. And it's in this sort of very dark moment that he entrusts himself to God. And so I think that when you read Jesus's citation of Psalm 31 and the fuller context of Psalm 31, it actually lines up very similarly to what we see in Psalm 22. And so so here is sort of Jesus's climactic lament to God, and what is he really asking for when he says, Father, into your hands I commit my spirit? Well, he's really asking for what the lamenter in Psalm 31 asked for, and that is to be vindicated before his enemies. And then, you know, what do we have as God's ultimate response to that cry for vindication, that lament for vindication? It's his resurrection from the dead. And so this is how God answers Jesus's lament to him. He vindicates him before his enemies by raising him from the dead. And so when you put these two kinds of laments in Luke side by side, laments to Jesus and laments by Jesus, I think it sort of really shapes the identity of Jesus in the Gospel of Luke.
Dr. Crisler, you mentioned Jesus' laments, and one of the ones that sort of strikes me, or at least I think it strikes me, is in Luke 22, where Jesus is in the Garden of Gethsemane praying, Father, if it be your will, remove this cup from me. Is that a lament?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I'm glad that you brought that up, because it definitely is a lament. You do find this kind of language both in the Psalms and in the prophets, and of course, the image of a cup is, especially in the prophets, it's usually a cup of wrath that one is having to sort of swallow. And so yes, Jesus, I think, is uttering there a lament. He recognizes what the cup symbolizes, and really this kind of goes back to the whole theology of lament, that behind laments that people make to God is always a concern with divine wrath, because they cry out for forgiveness of sin, they cry out to be delivered from their enemies, and they recognize that both of those things, both sin and being afflicted by enemies, can oftentimes be related to God's judgment or wrath against them. And so in this moment, you know, Jesus, I think, is facing that same kind of affliction. But of course, it's not because of his own sin. He's doing it on behalf of the sins of others, but still he'll have to face that cup of wrath. And so, yes, I think it very much falls in line with what a lamenter does in the Old Testament, that is, seeks to avert God's wrath. Now, sometimes, again, the psalmist is focusing upon his own guilt and his own sin, but there's also precedent set in the Old Testament, people like Moses, who intercede, sort of intercessory lamenters, if you will, who cry out to God for the nation and other people to avert that wrath. And so I think those strands of thought are in this prayer of Gethsemane as well. But Jesus ultimately, of course, you know, says, you know, let your will be done and not mine. And this is really what makes him a lamenter like no one else in Israel's scriptures and like no one else in the Judaism of that day. He is entirely innocent and yet entirely determined to do God's will, to bring saving grace to those that he's came for. So it sort of makes him this righteous lamenter par excellence. There's no one else like him. And then, of course, what really makes him stand out from all the others is that God answers his lament that I mentioned just a minute ago by raising him from the dead.
Dr. Crisler, what a wonderful place to end. We thank you again for giving us some insights into Luke's Gospel of Lament. If you don't mind, would you come back next week as we'll carry this conversation on?
Absolutely. I'd love to. Thanks for having me.
Great. And we invite our listeners to join us next week as well as we carry on our conversation with Dr. Channing Crisler.
Thank you for listening to The Lutheran Inquisitor with Pastor John Ehlers. If you have any questions or comments about the issues raised in this program, send an email to info@lutheranradio.co.uk. The podcast of this show is available from our website. Check our program online and stay tuned.